Hello, party people. Good afternoon and welcome to Office Hours back in the backyard. Sometimes I try to take you to exotic locations, but right now it's really comfortable in Las Vegas and we're doing some recovery time after partying for Super Bowl weekend. We did a John Summit concert and then a Larry June concert. And we got, I think, 6 hours of sleep combined across the span of 2 days. So there was a lot of sleeping happening yesterday, and today I'm getting back to work. So speaking of work, let's take your top voted questions from PollGab. If you've ever wanted to ask a question for the stream, you can go to the link in the video description and post your question there. Other people will upvote questions and whichever ones are most popular, which I never can seem to predict. I go into PollGab from time to time and I look at the questions that are coming in. Sometimes I think, oh, that's an interesting question, but it doesn't catch any votes. So it's always intriguing to see. Top voted question is from Old and Tired DBA, who asks, should I convert all of my parameters to local variables inside of stored procs? Well, your name, Old and Tired DBA, kind of gives me the clue in that your education is kind of from the 2000s era. I that's not a bad thing. I mean, I got my education back in the 2000s era as well. You just have to keep up with what's current. And back then, that was the only option that we had in order to get stable execution plans. So you would see people writing about that in books around the year of SQL Server 2000, 2005, 2008. But since then, we've got much, much better options. There are all kinds of things you can do. And I'm going to put in a plug for my Mastering Parameter Sniffing class, but you don't even have to pay for it. Just go look at the syllabus. Look at the list of modules in the course, and just that list of modules alone is probably going to open up your eyes in terms of what's possible these days. And I don't think I've seen anyone use local variables as the right answer for like the last 10, 15 years or so. So it's time to skill up a little bit there. Start with the free syllabus and then go from there. Next up, My Tea Got Cold says, do you ever use hints like assume min selectivity for filter estimates or assume join predicate depends on filters? He says, they've saved me a few times, but I think they're not in most people's toolboxes. I would agree they're not in my toolbox, not because they're not fine. I don't have any problem with them so whatsoever. It's just that they haven't been as useful for me as other techniques have. I kind of think of myself as like a carpenter where I've got all kinds of tools laid out in the tool bench in front of me. And I reach for different tools all the time and I go, oh, this one serves me pretty well to solve that problem. This one serves me to solve that problem. And I have never had a situation in query tuning where out of all the tools that I had, none of them could solve it, and I needed to reach for those tools. So just as an FYI, I don't have any experience with those either. I don't think I've even ever seen blog posts written about them, but they're documented. They're in the tool. They're fully supported. So if it works for you in your specific scenarios, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. All right, next up, let's see here. Emre asks, we have a problem with creating VMware snapshots unable to quiesce on SCV. Exception occurred. Is using a newer version of SQL Writer possible without updating SQL Server? So you said without updating SQL Server, there's a little bit of a catch. SQL Writer changes can be included in cumulative updates. So the first thing that I'd do is I'd make sure you're on the latest and greatest cumulative update first. Cumulative update for SQL Server. If you're on the latest and greatest cumulative update for SQL Server and you're still experiencing that problem, also, of course, make sure that you're up to date on all of your virtualization drivers, filter drivers, whatever it is that you're using, and then open a call with your virtualization vendor. Because that shouldn't be an issue. I've never seen a client have a problem quiescing volumes when they're on current versions of everything. Because it's not like virtualization is a brand new technology or freezing volumes is a brand new technology. I will say I've seen it on massively underpowered VMs. So I had a case once where the shop was using 1 core and 2 core SQL Server VMs and running a good workload through SQL Server at the same time. They were trying to take snapshot backups, and the snapshot backup provider just couldn't respond in time. And the symptoms that they got were unable to quiesce the volume from the virtualization side and from the hell's the name of that? VSS Writer in Windows. But it was just that the server was so massively overworked and the queues for everything were so long. So at that point, we ended up solving that by saying, all right, we just got to add more cores. If you're licensed with Enterprise Edition at the host layer already anyway, then it doesn't cost you extra to add more cores to each VM. Also, I should say and I'm imagining here, I've never seen this one, but I can imagine a situation where you have all of the backups trying to happen at the same time, like you scheduled everything every night at midnight, or you have them staggered to hit every hour on the hour. And in that case, you can run into situations where the host is massively busy for 30 or 60 seconds trying to kick off all these business or all these backups, and you can run into being unable to create VSS snapshots at that point as well. Your backup software may have an option to stagger backups randomly by a few minutes, like plus or minus 3 minutes for each VM. So you could try looking into that, but start with the earlier options that we talked about first. I guess I'd probably start with scheduling first, because it's the easiest one to fix. I see my little dog running around here, Beanie, so you may see him here in a minute. He's kind of investigating, sniffing the ground to see what's going on. I Like SQL Server asks, hi Brent, what is your favorite tequila drink? Says, I'm posting this on Friday, so it's legit. I'm drinking, and it's Tuesday. I'm not drinking tequila at the moment. That is gin and tonic. I'm a very simple bartender. Like, I only make... I'm very simple in the kitchen, too. Like, if anything takes more than 2 or 3 ingredients, I'm probably out. I've worked line cook before, so I am used to making very complex dishes. I just don't enjoy it anymore. I prefer going out to restaurants and bars. So if I'm making the drink, it's a tequila and soda, which I picked up from... I would never make a tequila and soda myself. But if somebody said you need to make a drink with tequila, I would... Honestly, I would just do sip tequila straight, because I really enjoy good tequila. I'm not even going to get into brands here, because it'll provoke a religious war. I like Clase Azul Reposado. I know that some people who are really into tequila think that it's overpriced. I think it's good. I think it's worth it, and I like the bottles. But if I'm ordering in a bar, margarita, all day, every day, love me some margaritas. They're fantastic. I don't like flavored margaritas like strawberry or melon or whatever else. I just like a good, simple margarita. Similarly, if you ask me what's my favorite rum drink, if I'm making it at home, it's a rum and Diet Coke, which I picked up from my father. Or if it's out at a bar, it's a classic a Hemingway daiquiri. Hemingway daiquiris are... I know if you've never had a Hemingway daiquiri before, your thoughts of a daiquiri are some big, huge 32-ounce thing that you get on Bourbon Street in New Orleans or down on the Strip in Vegas, and it's just an ice drink that's super sweet. Hemingway daiquiris are served in a very small glass. Hey, come here, big man. Come on over here. How you doing? This is Beanie, for those of you who haven't met Beanie yet. Beanie's about 7 years old. We say about because he was a stray. He came through during the pandemic to Eve's house. Well, you're scared? You don't like being on camera? You're afraid I'm going to put you in the water? I usually, when Beanie and I are near the pool, I pick him up and I put him in the water on top of a raft. He and I hang out on inflatable rafts together. Yeah, Hemingway daiquiri. 2 thumbs up. I only put 1 thumb up there, but I mean 2 thumbs up. Not that that's a tequila drink, but there we go. All right, let's refresh this here. Next top voted question. Oh, it was also from I Like SQL Server, who says, "Hi, Brent, I'm struggling setting up proper statistics handling, and I wonder if you have any updated resources on statistics maintenance. We have some large tables for us, a couple terabytes is large," he says, "and it's hard planning the correct sampling rate." For me, so do I have an updated guide on it? No, and it's something that I've been meaning to write. I've been had on the back burner. Thinking about sampling rate is wrong. Your sampling rate should most likely be 100%. The catch is you should be updating your stats way less often. I see people update their stats every day, which triggers parameter sniffing. By updating your statistics, you're flushing parts of the plan cache, which really causes parameter sniffing. And they're also updating stats every day with sampling. So the portions of the table that we see every day are all over the place. So the statistics are very inaccurate and unreliable. So it's the complete recipe for parameter sniffing. I'm surprised by, in the last year, I think I've had 4 clients try to hire me. And the symptoms they were experiencing were constant parameter sniffing issues all the time. And when they sent in their diagnostic data with my consultant toolkit, I just looked at the jobs and said, "Oh, you're updating your statistics every single day. Do me a favor, try doing that on weekends. Try doing it on Saturdays." And then that way your plan cache won't be so unpredictable all week. And they're like, "Oh my God, thank you. How could we ever repay you?" And I'm like, "Well, you could have hired me, but I gave you the solution for free," which isn't a great business model, but I figure if somebody's going to give them the answer for free, it should probably be me. Next up, Elwood asks, "What are your pros and cons of SQL Server backup to disk versus backup to URL in the context of Azure SQL VMs in terms of speed, cost, reliability, etc.?" First off, never backup locally. Always backup to a network share, or HTTP is totally fine. But when you backup to local disk, that backup is held hostage by that VM. So if the VM dies, you're SOL. I'll leave that to you to figure out what that stands for, dear reader. You have to get the backups off disk as quickly as possible and out onto a shared environment. Then you also want it somewhere that it can be restored as quickly as possible. In my humble experience, once people get their backups configured to a network share, they don't think about it again. They don't go off and play around with Azure backups, for example. I don't have a problem with Azure backups. I think they're cheaper, easier, and faster overall. When I say Azure backups, I'm meaning Azure backing up to an Azure file share. If you're in an Azure VM, that is a quicker, easier, safer, faster route to being able to recover either in the same region or to another region. So I would prefer that. It's just that I got to pick my battles. Holy cow, the neighbor's landscaper just showed up. So this is going to be the end of this video. It's going to be the last question we tackle here. I would prefer people go experiment with Azure backing up to URL. It's just that it does require some experimentation and configuration to find the right number of backup files for you, to get your storage paths correct. People try to back up to just one folder and then they hit performance limitations. It requires more work, and I gotta pick my battles. In terms of bang for the buck, that's probably not the sexiest battle that I could pick with my readers to get them to go make changes. But because you asked, I love it, and I would love for you to work on Azure backup tuning. All right, our neighbor is here, or our neighbor's landscaper is here. Everybody has landscapers in Las Vegas, just because when it's hot as all get out during the summer, you do not want to be out here doing any landscaping. So because they're running weed stuff and all that, and it's going to take a little while, well, it's not really weed stuff, it's blowers. They run blowers in order to blow the dust and all the loose stuff out, because you'll notice there's no grass here. You're not allowed to, let me rephrase that. Las Vegas Water District will pay you to get rid of your grass. They pay you to replace it with artificial turf. So you don't see a lot of people with genuine grass in their backyards. These noises are just blowers going through and blowing all the loose leaves out blowing them into a central place where they can go harvest them. So thanks for hanging out with me, and I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios, y'all.